Yada.
When?
Asharanam.
Without being alternatively protected.
Atmanam.
His own self.
Aikshata.
Saw.
Shanta Vajanam.
The horse is being tired.
Astram.
Weapon.
Brahmashiraha.
The topmost or ultimate nuclear.
Mene.
Applied.
Atmatranam.
Just to save himself.
Dvija
Atmajaha.
The son of a Brahmana.
Translation, when the son of the Brahmana, Ashvatthama, saw that his horses were tired, he considered that there was no alternative protection outside of his using the ultimate weapon, the Brahmastra, nuclear weapon. So you can repeat, when the son of the Brahmana,
Ashvatthama,
saw that his horses were tired,
he considered that
there was no alternative
for protection outside
of his using the ultimate weapon,
the Brahmastra nuclear weapon.
So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
In the ultimate issue only, when there is no alternative, the nuclear weapon called the Brahmastra is applied.
The word Vijat Majaha is significant here because Ashvatthama, although the son of Dronacharya, was not exactly a qualified Brahmana. The most intelligent man is called a Brahmana, and it is not a hereditary title. Ashvatthama was also formally called the Brahma Bandhu, or the friend of a Brahmana. Being a friend of a Brahmana does not mean that one is a Brahmana by qualification. A friend or a son of a Brahmana, when fully qualified, can be called a Brahmana and not otherwise. Since Ashvatthama's decision is immature, he is purposely called herein the son of a Brahmana. So yada sharanam atmanam oikshita shanta vajanam astram brahmashiro mene atmatranam vijat majaha. So omagada timidandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur and meditam yena tasmai shigurvena maha.
So it's a very interesting, there's several points we'll make here with the Sanskrit verse and also the meaning.
That Dvijat Majaha is actually a very interesting word. It means Dvija means to be born twice.
Thank you.
To be born twice. So, Dvija is also the name of a particular animal. Does anyone know what animal Dvija is the name of? What animal is born twice?
Birds.
In Sanskrit, dvija means also bird, because the bird egg plops out of the mother, and then after the mother sits on the egg for some time, then the egg hatches. So that's two births. And so the Brahman also, he has two births too. Of course, janmana jayate shudra. The first birth is also considered a shudra birth, even if one is born in a Brahman family. But samskara bhavet dvijam, by the proper reformatory method, he's considered dvija, or twice born. Reformatory method means the samskara, there's a proper samskara. And with brahmanas, they would get the Brahman thread, at least the first line of the Gayatri, the Brahma Gayatri, when they were very young, like 5 or 6 years of age. So they were considered twice born at that particular point. And then samskara bhavet dvijam, he actually becomes a brahmana when he has that samskara, not before that. And also, not only the samskara, but he has to continue living up to the terms of the samskara. Otherwise, a brahmana can lose his caste by many different means, which we described previously. So Ashvatthama
was definitely not actually a Brahmana, even though he had received the samskara from his father. His father was very, was actually a favorite, considered Ashwatthama his favorite. And Arjuna, in order to learn certain things, had to pretty much sneak up and overhear what Dronacharya was saying to Ashwatthama. For example, there's that famous story of the chakra formation. The chakra formation was a particular formation where, practically speaking, you couldn't pierce through the enemy lines. And so what happened is that Arjuna... Oh, this is a very interesting story. That Arjuna actually ate very quickly. He wasn't like Bhimsain. Bhimsain took his time. I guess it's like me. I take my time eating. But Bhimsain, well, not only took his time, he ate a lot. So Arjuna would just take his food very quickly like this so he could get back to what Dronacharya was saying to his son. And he overheard this whole conversation about how to break in and how to break out of the chakra formation. Now, about the chakra formation, it's also interesting that Arjuna mentioned this, talked about it to his wife, Subhadra, when she was pregnant with Abhimanyu. And Abhimanyu learned while he was in the womb, which is actually quite interesting. Like I mentioned the previous day, the scientists have ascertained that children can actually recognize certain words even when they come out of the womb. That the words that they've heard continually, they respond to those words. So it's very important when a lady is expecting that, not that they teach her the Brahmastra. I mean, you have a child come out and you just like destroy everything in creation. But that she hears Krishna Katha. Of course, like Pallad Maharaj too, within the womb of Kayadu. So it's a very important principle. So Abhimanyu learned this within the womb of his mother. In any case, Ashwatthama also learned this. But Abhimanyu only learned half of it. He learned how to break into the chakra formation and not how to break out. And that's why later on, he was killed. And that was the particular day that Arjuna was lured away from the battlefield. And as a result of Abhimanyu being killed, Arjuna took a vow of killing Jayadrath. You know that story? The Mahabharata, that Arjuna vowed, he said, the next day I will kill Jayadrath, or else I will enter into the fire. And everyone was worried, even Krishna was worried. This is Yogamaya, that Krishna gets worried about the safety of his devotee. And so, basically, the whole army, the Kuru army, was defending Jayadrath, and Jayadrath was in the back of the whole battlefield, so Arjuna had to pierce through every single member of the Kuru army in order to reach Jayadrath. Finally, he gets to the end, but there's still some protection around Jayadrath, and Krishna pulls his ultimate trick by having it seem that the sun is set for the day. In those days, they actually adhered to some rules in the battle. Later on, actually, they broke all the rules in the battle crew, etc. But in any case, so Krishna made it appear that the sun had set, and then all the Kurus became ecstatic, you know, jumping up and down in ecstasy. Now Arjuna's going to have to enter into the fire. And they let down their guard, and even Jayadrath was just going like this, you know, and making, sticking his tongue out at Arjuna. And then Krishna just went like that, and the sun appeared again. And Krishna said to Arjuna, you know, just cut his head off. But he had to cut his head off in a very specific way, because Jayadrath's father had the benediction of whoever caused his son's head to fall to the ground, he would just like burst into flames and he'd die immediately. So Krishna said to Arjuna that fire this arrow, but at the same time fire this other arrow that would cause the head to fly through the air and land on the lap of Jayadrath's father. So anyway, so he fired the arrow. Jayadrath's head flew off and landed on Jayadrath's father's lap. And Jayadrath's father, you know, obviously when you see a head on your lap, you don't ask whose head is it. You know, there's a reflex action, right? You know, ooh, you know, just imagine someone's head. It didn't matter. You know, if it was your mother's head or father's head, you would actually react exactly the same way. And you go, ooh, and he threw it off, and then he died as a result of that. Anyway, so that's the story of, you know, Arjuna getting even because Abhimanyu was killed unfairly. So let's get back to this whole point of Brahmastra. Brahmastra is a very interesting weapon, and it's brought forward by the use of a particular mantra. And one has to be initiated in that mantra. And there's only one person that I know who is immune to the Brahmastra. Let's see if any of you know this. There's only one person who is immune to the Brahmastra. And the, not Lord Brahma. Forget about Lord Brahma. It's his weapon. Anybody know? No.
Hanuman.
How did you guess?
I think I heard from you.
Oh, you heard from me. That doesn't count. So, the story is, when Hanuman was born, and then he started chasing after the sun planet, thinking it was like a mango or an orange. Or ripe. And he was chasing after that, and he was getting ready to swallow the sun. So as he was getting ready to swallow the sun, he had some competition. And the competition was Rahu, because Rahu's business also was to swallow the sun. And Rahu said, get out of my way, you big monkey. And Hanuman basically like kicked him out of the way. And Rahu went back and complained to Indra. Because there was this deal that Rahu had as his food, the sun and the moon, because Rahu was the eclipse. You know, whenever there's an eclipse, it's very inauspicious. That's why when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, it was an eclipse. And everyone was chanting the holy names. It was like a trick of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And even in India today, when there's an eclipse, they actually stop all the deity worship and they throw away all the foodstuffs because they're considered impure. So Rahu went and complained to Indra, and Indra got angry, and he came up to Hanuman and he eventually fired his Vajra, his thunderbolt at Indra, at Hanuman, and knocked Hanuman to the ground and hit him on the jaw, actually. That's why Hanuman is called the name means the jaw. It's like a wrestler, you know, you say the jaw or the fist or something like that. It's interesting, isn't it? Who's the greatest devotee of Lord Ram? The jaw. So Hanuman was locked to the ground, unconscious. Everyone was thinking he was going to die. Vayu, his father, stopped the wind in the whole universe. So people couldn't breathe, pass stool, you couldn't light fires. I mean, you couldn't do anything in the whole universe. It became very hot instead of cold. Because, you know, there's no air circulation. And all living entities started to die. And Lord Brahma, he went along with the demigods to Vayu, and they went to Hanuman. He was lying in a cave because Vayu had brought him to a cave, and they brought Hanuman back to consciousness. And then at that point, all the demigods began to bless Hanuman with different blessings. You know, then he got knowledge, and then Lord Brahma blessed him that he could never be hurt by the Brahmastra. It was really interesting. Or captured by the Brahmastra. Then later on, it's very interesting that later on Indrajit fired the type of Brahmastra, which are the ropes of Lord Brahma. Because after Hanuman went to Lanka and he destroyed the Ashok Grove and killed many of the Rakshasas, it's described that he was so mischievous that sometimes he would even pass urine in the mouths of the Rakshasas. And they would say, what are you doing? He said, I'm just a monkey. I mean, what do you expect? Unusual fighting technique. I think it was Akshay Kumar, he did that too. So it's quite an interesting personality in many ways. So then what happened is that Indrajit was fighting with him, and then he realized that he can only employ the Brahmastra, the ultimate weapon. So Hanuman, in order to respect the weapon, there's two things that happened. In order to respect the weapon, he made believe he was captured. And also he wanted to be captured because he wanted to see Ravan. Otherwise he needed an appointment. You know, it was 2 weeks he had to wait for an appointment otherwise. Therefore, you know, he made this arrangement. And also it was described about the Brahmastra that if you're captured by the ropes, it's a type of Brahmastra, if you're captured by the ropes and then someone else ties you up with another rope, you're freed. This is interesting. That's described in the Valmiki Ramayan. That, you know, it captures you, but then if someone else ties you with regular ropes, then the Brahmastra goes away. So the Rakshasas didn't understand that. So they didn't understand that Hanuman was invulnerable from the Brahmastra, and that also it would negate or nullify the Brahmastra by tying him with regular ropes. Anyway, he was dragged to the assembly house of Ravana, and you all know the rest of the story. So there's that story about the Brahmastra. So he's invulnerable. He can't be hurt by this Brahmastra. And then there's another story about the Brahmastra in the battle of Kurukshetra. Karna actually wanted to use the Brahmastra. And previously, Karna had learned the Brahmastra from his guru, Parashuram. Parashuram, of course, had a temper. He had killed the Kshatriyas 21 times, so he didn't like Kshatriyas very much. He had this post-traumatic stress, because his father was killed by Kartavirya, Arjuna's sons. I mean, that's why. And, you know, if your father was killed, you want to get even with all the Kshatriyas. So not only he killed the Kshatriyas that were there, he waited until the next generation was born and he killed them. Or they grew up and he killed them 21 times. Pretty good vengeance, isn't it? Get even with it. Get even with those Kshatriyas. So, interesting story. So Parashuram didn't like Kshatriyas. So when Karna wanted to get instruction, he made believe that he was a Brahmin. And we know the story that Parashuram discovered he actually wasn't a Brahmin when Parashuram had his head on Karna's lap, and this big creature, you know, is described, not just an ordinary bug, was burrowing its way into Karna's leg. And Karna just said, I don't want to disturb my Gurudev. But Gurudev woke up when he felt a drop of blood hit him, you know, hot blood from Karna's leg. And that's pretty inauspicious to have your blood hit your spiritual master. So then Parashuram understood he wasn't a Brahmin. He was a Kshatriya, because only a Kshatriya could tolerate that. Brahmanas, they don't like pain. They don't like if it's too cold or too hot. Those who like it when it's too cold or too hot, they're not Brahmanas. So, Brahmanas also like sweets. Like Prabhupada said that. And when devotees would say they like the sweets, and Prabhupada said it's a Brahminical tendency to like sweets. Of course, we have to take care of their health too. So he got cursed. After he had gotten all this instruction, he said that you will forget your mantra when it's the last moment of your life. That's when you're going to forget. Also, Karna was cursed by a cow. It was interesting. He had killed a cow by accident, and he was cursed that his chariot would sink into the earth when it was time for him to be killed. So he had these two curses, one by his guru, one by a cow. This cow, Bhumi, etc., is earth. So what happened is that when he was the final battle with Arjuna, first of all, his chariot fell, sunk into the earth, and then he got down from his chariot to try to pick it up, pick it out of the earth. The earth swallowed it, in fact. And he tried to use the Brahmastra, and he was unable. He couldn't remember the mantras to use the Brahmastra. And then Krishna said to Arjuna, kill him now. And Arjuna said, I'm not going to kill him now. It's not proper Kshatriya etiquette to kill him now. Because, you know, he's off his chariot, I'm on my chariot, he doesn't have his bow and arrows, and, you know, it's just not right. And Krishna said, do it anyway. And then Arjuna was just really reluctant again. And then Krishna just reminded him of all the insults that he suffered and Draupadi suffered at Karna's hands. And then Arjuna got really, really angrier and angrier and angrier, and he fired his arrow and Karna died in that particular fashion. Anyway, so that's another story about the Brahmastra. So the Brahmastra is a variant. You find it mentioned many, many times in the Vedic literatures. So somehow or other, Ashvatthama, who was unqualified, had this ability to use the Brahmastra. And he didn't know how to withdraw the Brahmastra. He didn't know how to withdraw. He knew how to shoot it, but not how to withdraw it. So therefore, later on, when Vyasadeva actually stopped Arjuna, because Arjuna's Brahmastra was trying to counteract the Brahmastra of Ashvatthama's, Vyasadeva instructed them both to withdraw. And Ashvatthama, either he didn't know or he said he didn't know how to withdraw the Brahmastra, and then he refocused it on Parikshit. So anyway, so these are some of the stories regarding the Brahmastra. So any questions or comments about these points? I mean, I don't have anything else to say about the Brahmastra unless someone has some questions. Or about Ashvatthama.
That is comparable to the nuclear weapon.
Yeah, but it's focused. Like, if I was a fire Brahmastra, I could kill him and you would be all right. It's very focused. It has, Prabhupada said, it's like total conflagration. I mean, total fire. I mean, he'd become like cremated instantly. We'd save money. All we would see in half a second was a pile of ashes where he was sitting. And none of us would be hurt. But if you use it when it's not necessary, it can destroy the whole creation. That's another point. Only if there's no other alternative, as Prabhupada says here. Let's say he's attacking me and he has what's the type of machine gun? M17 or something like that? Uzi, he has an Uzi. He's attacking me and I don't have any weapons and I've lost my mantras or forgot about whatever. And I forgot how to chant Hare Krishna. Then at that point, I can use the Brahmastra to attack him. But the Brahmastra was never used unless it was absolutely necessary. In fact, you find that Lakshman at one point on the battle with Ravan wanted to use, Indrajit, he wanted to use the Brahmastra. And Lord Ram said, no, no, don't use it, it's not appropriate. Because only can be used when you have no other recourse, and it's very focused. Yeah, like Parikshit, in Uttaru's womb, he was in Uttaru's womb, and it was focused on the embryo, but not focused on her. In other words, the embryo could have been killed, but not Uttara, and that's pretty focused. It's like a laser beam or something like that. Just killing the embryo. I mean, he didn't want to kill Uttara. He just wanted to kill the embryo. So that's the Brahmastra weapon. In ISKCON, they used to call tea with hot peppers in it a Brahmastra. It was interesting. Nowadays, devotees drink tea all the time. You know, of course, not tea with caffeine. But you know, the devotees were just like, as soon as they started to have little sniffles, they were getting tea, and they were at tea time, you know. And Prabhupada really didn't like this whole concept of drinking even herbal tea. I may have to tell you that. The reason was, it reminded him of the British. Because if you go to India, or you go to UK, there's always this, like, tea time. And you may be going in your taxi to an airport and be like late for the plane, but the driver has to stop for tea no matter what. Anyone's ever experienced that? Yeah. They said, you know, I get to the airport. No, just be 2 minutes. But it actually takes a half an hour. Yeah. And it's tea time. Another reason they stop at the Dhaba is that they get free food. Yeah. If they're taking tourists in their taxi, they give them free food. Because they feel the tourists are going to buy something, so they always stop. Anyway, so Prabhupada, he really wasn't so favorable to British things. And it, Prabhupada was, you know, all this tea, like, of course he had this interaction with his wife, which was quite traumatic, where Prabhupada said to her, she was very addicted to tea and tea biscuits. I mean, she actually sold Prabhupada's Bhagavatams for tea biscuits. So Prabhupada had this post-traumatic stress about tea. You know, so, and then Prabhupada at one point said to her, tea or me? And she said, tea. And then Prabhupada said, you know, I'm out of here, you know. So Prabhupada, when the devotees started taking tea, they were using excuses to take tea. You know, they just had a little sniffle, or it was a little cold out, let's drink some hot tea. Nowadays, you can go to GBC meetings and they have herbal tea. They have all these tea bags there. You can choose the Red Zinger tea, or... You've heard of that before? You have these herbal teas and the little sachets, you know. And, but in those days, so anyway, so the devotees, the Prabhupada came down, he saw the devotees drinking tea, and he said, what's the problem? He said, we're sick. And then he tasted some of the tea, and said, this is not going to get you better. He said, I'll show you how to make tea. And so he got a big pot, and there was lemon juice, hot peppers, and ginger. And ground ginger, lemon juice, hot peppers. And you'd certainly got over being sick if you took a glass of that. And the devotees named it the Brahmastra. You remember that? Anyone remember that? And so if you got sick, you know, let me make some Brahmastra for you. So that's very interesting. And devotees didn't drink a lot of tea in those days. No, certainly no herbal tea. Only when they got to good Prabhupada. It was this whole English thing and Prabhupada's interactions with his wife and everything like that. Just the very word, you know, Prabhupada would even make people vow at the time of initiation, no coffee, tea, or cigarettes. Of course, the real tea that we're not supposed to take is the tea with the caffeine in it. You know, the black tea in India, the tea they take is very black. I mean, it's so heavy in caffeine, it's incredible. I haven't taken it, but I've seen them make it. It's not just like your ordinary tea you get here in New Zealand. It's like taking an energy drink when you drink it. Anyway, so that's our ISKCON Brahmastra. So any other questions or comments about any of the things we said? I don't have anything else to say about Brahmastras. Anyone else think of when Brahmastras were used? Not the drink, but the... I'm trying to think of... Yeah. Ashwatthama is still living, yes. That's later on that story. So, and also in the Mahabharata, that he was cursed to smell bad for, you know, 5,000 years until Kali Yuga began. And then he would become a nice Brahmin after that. And he's cursed to wander, and nobody would go near him because he would smell so bad. And they, of course, they took the jewel from his forehead and everything like that. So he just had to wander. Ashwatthama is considered Chiranjeev. I mean, he lives as long as this creation. He got that blessing. Somehow or other, he got that blessing. He's also considered a partial expansion or manifestation of some of the energy of Lord Shiva. That's why he was so angry. When he was attacking the camp where the Pandavas' children were, after the Pandavas weren't there, he was repelled at first by some like celestial soldiers, but later on he was empowered by Lord Shiva to destroy the camp. So you had, so it was actually a pastime. And the Mahabharata describes that there were so many Lord Shiva's associates who were helping Ashwatthama destroy the camp of the Pandavas. So yeah, he's still alive. And he's a good guy now. I think he learned his lesson, you know. 5,000 years, nobody will go near you because you smell so bad. Pretty lonely life. Hanuman, oh yeah, Hanuman is good. Hanuman is in Kimpurusha Loki. He's going to live as long as Lord Ram's pastimes are chanted. And that's a long time. Hanuman is still around, and if you want to meet him, you can meet him. Yes, he's definitely there. So, any other questions? questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues? We have another 2 minutes or something like that. No? Yes.
At the time that Arjuna was killing Karna,
yes.
Did he know that it was his older brother?
No. No. He didn't know it was the older brother. It's a very sad story. I mean, the story of Karna is one of the saddest stories in the Mahabharata. That he found out later on, and Yudhisthira found out later on, that because after Karna was killed, Krishna actually called him Kaunteya. And Arjuna, this is interesting, and Arjuna said, "What? What did you say?" He said, "Kaunteya, he's your elder brother." And, you know, Arjuna went, and Yudhisthira was completely upset about the whole thing. Elder brother. And, of course, he was offered by Krishna that he could be the king instead of Yudhisthira, and Yudhisthira would have accepted that. But Krishna didn't want that. Krishna wanted this killing to take place, because it was his way of getting rid of some of the demoniac forces on the earth planet. You know, a very efficient way. When you get millions of people killed just in one battlefield, you know, a few days in one battlefield. In fact, even you have personalities like Duryodhana and Shakuni, they were sent to actually cause this problem. Duryodhana, he's considered an incarnation of Kali Yuga. And he's called the worst of the demigods. Kali is a demigod. So in other words, he was an expansion or incarnation of a demigod. And Shakuni was Dwarpara. And so there's problems in Dwarpara Yuga, problems in Kali Yuga. So they had as their duty, I mean, whether they were aware of it or not is another thing, but they had as their duty to cause this this conflagration, this battle, so that many of these demoniac persons could be killed simultaneously. It was all part of Krishna's plan to relieve the earth from its burden. So the whole thing was a pastime. I mean, so Duryodhana was doing service. Not something I want to do. And Shakuni was doing service. Like that. But Dhritarashtra is described, did not go back to Godhead, even though he had the association of Vidura in the final days, because his offenses against the Vaishnavas. He merged into the Brahmajyoti. That was his punishment, or his liberation that he attained. Anyway, so the battle of Kurukshetra was pre-planned by Krishna, so that everyone... And then Krishna got cursed after the battle of Kurukshetra, that his family would do a similar thing. So then you have the Yadu dynasty all getting drunk and on rice wine, and fighting with these sticks, these canes that were as strong as iron rods, and killing each other. Pretty heavy.
Nobody survived.
Oh, the Yadu dynasty, there are a few members who survived. I mean, Uddhava survived, and some of Krishna's grandchildren, Brajanava, survived. I mean, there were some survivors from the Yadu dynasty. But the ones who were actually like expansions or incarnations of demigods, they are the ones who killed each other off. Because it's described that the earth would have been overburdened with Krishna's family members. Now, why is that? Because Krishna's family members, one explanation given by the Acharyas was that they would be very proud. You know, we're Krishna's family, we're the Yadu dynasty. And because of that, they would create havoc on the earth planet. And also, they wanted to go after Krishna left. And so they fought with each other and killed each other. Interesting story. I mean, really hellish, killing each other. Someone's phone is whistling at us, has a message for you. And any other questions?
Perhaps the effects of nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
Astra.
Yeah.
It's been stated so many thousands of years ago, and they are using it nowadays.
Yeah.
It is still so destructive as well.
So yeah.
The effects of it.
The present-day nuclear weapons are not as focused, or not at all focused, and they create casualties. What is that word? where they create casualties where they're not intended to create casualties. You know, with men, with children, women, and all those other things. It's just like the chemical weapons that were used in Syria. That so many people are killed unnecessarily. And so nuclear means it functions on the basis of, like Prabhupada said, total conflagration, which means total fire, and has something to do with atomic energy. No other questions? Comments? Anyone want to learn the Brahmastra? I can teach you. Actually, the Brahmastra mantra is in the Atharva Veda. The four original Vedas, the Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva. Of course, the Rig Veda is the Veda of hymns, and the Sama Veda is the Veda of music and, you know, how to chant the hymns. And then the Atharva Veda is the Veda of like curses and weapons and stuff like that. So that's what the Kshatriyas would study to learn the Brahmastras, the Atharva Veda. And Yajurveda, of course, is the Veda for the Swaha business. You understand Swaha business? Yeah, sacrifices. You know, Swaha, Swaha, Om, Swaha. Narayanaya, Swaha. Some people, they do these fire sacrifices, they do everything Swaha. Isn't it? I mean, I've heard the modern version. Prabhupada did a very simple fire sacrifice. It was just the Mangal Charna when Prabhupada did it. And nowadays, they get into all these things. They say, Sri Gurudhari Temple, Swaha. And they even mention my name, Bir Krishna Goswami, Swaha. They do that. I mean, they get this whole list, like it goes on for 2 hours, doing the Swaha to everything, you know. Isn't it? Ornitai, Swaha. What?
What does the word Swaha mean?
I mean, to offer. It's the wife of Agni Devi, Agni Dev. Yeah, it's the wife of Agni Dev. And so it's said, I'm offering this. It means I'm offering this. Swaha. It's traditional in Vedic sacrifices. You always say Swaha. Indraya, Swaha. Varunaya, Swaha. Agni Devaya, Swaha. I mean, it's really, they go through the whole list. You've ever heard it like that?
Yeah.
They say, Auckland, Swaha, Gornitai, Swaha. They do. They do the whole disciplic succession, too. Prabhupadaya, Swaha, Bhaktisiddhantaya, Swaha. It makes it so complex. And whenever we have a sacrifice that's supposed to be performed, I tell the priest, I said, keep it simple, please. Just Mangal Charna, please. But they always add other things at the end. Mangal Charna and Purnahoti is what Prabhupada did. That was it. Mangal Charna means the prayers of the spiritual master, prayers of the incarnation of Krishna, and ultimately Radharani and Krishna. And Purnahoti is what you end with. Is when you pour everything in there, you put your banana in, like, Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanaha Taya Chajakadataya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. Okay? So we have a big day, many visits, a lot of eating. Right? Oh, I think we'll offer our bases. All glorious, there's divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.